Welcome to the Favorites, the podcast. I'm Chad Millman. And hosting the show today is Blackjack Fletcher.
Oh, that Matt Ford. Matt Ford just does a great job with that. He does a better Chad than Chad does. Chad is on vacation, I believe, somewhere in the south of France this week. So he doesn't love all of you enough to be here. I, on the other hand, just wrapped up 7 hours worth of travel through airplanes and trains and came right here because I love you, all of you, far more than Chad does. So suck it, Chad. And we've got a show to do today, so let's do it, right? We've got the Masters going on, right? The Masters, that's the name of it, happening this week. Apparently, it's a big golf tournament, and joining me today is the only person I would trust for advice on betting golf or watching golf. Apparently, he's in the middle of a zoo in Augusta, Georgia. It's Jason Sobel.
Blackjack. Two things here. First of all, thanks for having me on. Second of all, I can't believe Chad would miss this. I'm very disappointed in him.
Yep, he's a real
Thirdly,
dick.
If you call this a zoo, you get kicked out. So I'm going to leave those as your words and not mine. They have some very specific things that you can say around here. That's not one of them, I think. And the fourth thing is, let's get this thing rolling. I know you're not a huge golf guy, but by the end of this phone call, by the end of this podcast, I absolutely believe that you're going to be a golf expert and know what to bet on this week, dude.
Well, that is a bold statement, and it's full of confidence and bravado, things I appreciate. So let's start out with, I think, what the question that's on everyone's mind for this Masters is, can Fred Couples get the win?
No. Next question.
He generally plays well in the first round.
He does play well. He does play well. Usually plays well in the first round. I believe it was last year, 2 years ago. He's like a medical marvel. The fact that he was giving speeches here. They all do, especially the older guys, do some corporate events and make some side money out here and do some other things. I heard he had spoken at a corporate event where he said, literally, I my back is wrapped up. I can't touch my toes. I mean, I feel awful. I don't want to play golf other than it's the Masters and I have to go out here and give it a shot. And he played really well for a few rounds. So, no, he can't win. In fact, he's not even my favorite of the old guys, I guess, if you're going to group them. But, he keeps plugging away every single year. At some point, he's just going to give it up. At some point, he's just going to say, my back hurts too much. I can't do this anymore, as much as I like being here. But he's going to give it a shot this week.
So who's your favorite old guy?
Vijay Singh. Coming off a sixth-place finish at the Honda Classic just about 2 months ago. He's actually playing decent golf. Everyone goes Fred Couples. Fred Couples is a sentimental pick. Bernhard Langer is probably the historic pick. He's played really well here over the last few years. Langer is now, I believe, 59, 60 years old, maybe even older. Getting up there in age. Vijay Singh is a guy who still plays pretty regularly on the PGA Tour, even though he's, 54, 55.
Right.
But he can still hang with these guys just a little bit every once in a while. So if you're going just one old guy, and I know this is kind of a weird place to start, but if you're going one old guy out there above 50, I think Vijay's my guy.
All right, so there we go. If you're looking for an older player, Vijay Singh, let's take a look at some of the younger bucks out there, Jason. Give me three or four guys that you're taking a look at that maybe, you know, I'm not talking about Zach Johnson here. Give me some guys you're looking at that you think maybe you're shaping up to have a good week at Augusta.
Yeah, I love the prop to take the winner, the outright winner this week at under the age of 50 years old. So if you can get that one, hammer it. I really like that. Wow. The first guy I'm looking at is Ricky Fowler. First of all, Blackjack, I've got a hard and fast rule when we get to the Masters, and that is,
I like it hard and
you
fast.
Have to have been playing well for the first 3 months of the year. You can't come in here and find your game. There are no surprises. Even if you didn't pick Patrick Reed last year, that's fine. I understand it, but he was top 10 in each of his last three starts coming into this tournament. So you look at it, you go back, you say, you know what, I probably should have seen that coming a little bit. same thing this year. I'm looking at the guys who have a handful of top tens already in the first 3 months. So I mentioned Ricky Fowler's name there, a win in Phoenix. He was second place in this tournament last year. It's the convergence, and I always look at this, the convergence of recent form and past history on this golf course. Ricky Fowler has everything that I'm looking for, so he's kind of leading off my list right there. After him, Justin Thomas. His strokes gained approach average. I know you're probably not really
right,
into
digging around
the internet
weeds here, buddy.
For strokes gained, huh?
I told you to talk to me like a six-year-old, all right?
Okay. When he swings the club face on the ball makes it go really far and straight.
There we go.
Does that work for you?
Yep.
Okay.
Got it.
And the ball tends to fly really close to the hole when he hits it there.
Ooh,
and
that's
in fact,
good.
The ball, when he hits it, goes closer to the hole than when anybody else hits it.
Listen, you always want to be in or around the hole.
Really, really good at golf. Yeah.
See, that's my heart.
Is that better for you? Okay. I feel like I'm talking to you like a four-year-old, not a six-year-old. I want to not dumb it down so much, but no,
right,
in any case.
So
JT, great ball striker. I like him.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. You mentioned that you don't find your game at Augusta. You kind of have to be playing well in order to be able to compete there. Rory McIlroy is playing as well as anyone in the world right now, is he not?
Correct.
So what do you think about him now? He's got his little peccadillos over at Augusta. Can he overcome those?
I love Rory's game. I love the way he's been playing. I like him here a lot. But there are a couple of big factors here. First of all, in the past decade, no pre-tournament favorite has won the green jacket. So I think every year it feels like we come into this thing, whether it's Rory or Jordan Spieth or Tiger Woods or whoever the hot guy of the moment is, we all come here and say, that of course he's going to win. He's playing the best, and this is the biggest tournament. He's definitely going to win. It never happens. Chalk does not cash at Augusta unless it's Tiger Woods and it's early 2000s, and he's playing his best golf of his life. But I don't see that happening this week because Rory's got some demons he needs to exercise here. Obviously, we've seen it in the past. Last year, he said he was playing not to lose instead of playing to win. He clinched a career Grand Slam, win all four major championships with a win here this week. I just think that's so much pressure on him. I do think it'll happen at some point, but quite frankly, Blackjack, we thought Ernie Els would have a bunch of Masters wins by the end of his career as well, and that never happened. So I don't think it's going to happen for Rory McIlroy this week. If you want to place a bet on him, my favorite bet is probably a top 10 bet, which is probably just about even money for him right now. Maybe get it a little bit on the plus side and can get some value there, but I don't like him as an outright winner this week.
All right, now, Jason, I want to ask you about one of the guys you mentioned as a pick you had, and that's Ricky Fowler. Ricky Fowler is known for his incredible golf, but also his wild fashion sense. Some of the clothing that he wears out there on the course can be eclectic, to say the least. Now, what I want to know from you, Jason, as a man of the golf world, a savant of the sport, is does the clothing help him in the sense that if you look good, you feel good, play good, Deion Sanders? Or is it a detriment, have a couple of bad shots? Nobody wants to be getting their ass kicked wearing orange pants. So is the sexiness of the wardrobe a detriment or a benefit?
Well, first of all, Blackjack, when you're playing golf, and I know you don't play that much, clothing always helps because if you're not wearing any, it's things get in the way. So you want to have clothes on. As far as what clothes they are...
Wait, hold on. Was that just a dick reference?
No. I wouldn't do that. I'm much too professional.
All right.
You can translate it as that, but I would never, ever go that way.
Okay.
They do it. This is my least favorite part of Masters season is Masters scripting season. So instead of, hey, let's see what Ricky Fowler is wearing on the first tee at Augusta on Thursday morning, his Puma PR people will send out scripting of what he's wearing and put it all over Twitter weeks ahead of time. And
gross.
It's gotten to the point where it used to be Tiger and Ricky and maybe Rory. Now you can go online. I saw the other day Brandon Grace has his clothes scripted for the next 4 days.
Who?
What he's going to wear at Augusta National. Exactly. I've never looked at what Brandon Grace has worn ever before. I'm not going to look at it this week. And I certainly don't want to look at it a week ahead of time to figure out what he's going to be wearing so I can go buy it and sit on my couch and root for him while he plays in the Masters. I can't imagine anyone does that. So clothes don't matter. I just don't care. I don't care what these guys are wearing. It doesn't factor into anything they do. I wish the PR folks out there who work for all the companies and need to feel important could find some other way of feeling important.
Because you're talking about Darren Revelle right now.
Scripting. Yeah, I am kind of talking about Revelle. you know what? And that makes me feel so much better about my take on this.
All right, Jason. So let me ask you one more question before we let you go here. You're down there at Augusta. You've seen these guys. You've been following this closely. Is there anyone outside of those three or four you gave us, someone kind of a longer shot down the board that you think maybe is playing with the confidence, the skill at this time of year to maybe pull the upset at Augusta?
Again, Blackjack, I'm going with guys who have played well already this year. I don't think this is going to be a surprise. I think that if you're paying even a little bit of attention to guys who have been on leaderboards, you're going to be on it. Ian Poulter's guy, 4 top tens already this year.
Speaking of
the most he's ever had going into the Masters, and he's played well here before. I like Ian Poulter. I like Mark Leishman, who's just seems to fly under the radar, keeps getting better and better. Matt Kuchar has been fantastic so far this year. I know a lot of people don't like him right now. He stiffs his caddies, and he doesn't give putts to Sergio Garcia. And, you know, there's all sorts of Kuchraversies out there, as we start calling them on the Action Network Golf Podcast. Yeah, it was mine, but Sleaze wants 5% of the royalties, so I'm going to help him out a little bit, kick the kid a couple of bucks his way. But, Matt Kuchar's a guy who's played well. So those are some names that are not necessarily the favorites, but guys that I think have played well already this year and should continue playing well this week.
Well, you may have Kuchraversies, but people still like him better than Ian Poulter. That guy's a real dick, from what I hear.
I mean, as a casual observer of the game of golf, Blackjack, if I give you Matt Kuchar, Ian Poulter, Bubba Watson, Sergio Garcia, all locked in a room together, which one do you go after? And you know,
Poulter. First of all, not American. I know some of the other ones are not American either, but I've read the most negative things about him on ESPN.com's homepage, so I'm going to go with him. Bubba escapes because he's American. Sergio, I don't know. Sergio seems kind of harmless to me. Maybe he gets a little uptight every now and then, but I don't really have a huge deal with him. And Kuchar, I thought the caddy thing was overblown, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's definitely Ian Poulter. Dick.
Okay. That's fair. I wanted to get your take on that from being the guy outside the game. And I can tell you I've known all those guys for years, and I've had really good interactions with them and really bad interactions with all of those guys.
I'm right, though. It's Poulter, right?
What's that?
I'm right. It's Poulter.
Yeah,
he's the Revelle of the group. Yeah. I know it. He's the Revelle of the bunch.
Poulter is Revelle. That's, I can see. Revelle's got a lot of people lost in the match. He wants people to love him, but as soon as people try to love him, he wants them to hate him. So, yeah, that's Bubba Watson in a nutshell right there.
All right, I'm going to start calling Revelle Bubba around the office.
Oh, I love that. That's got to stick.
Yep. All right, Jason, go have fun in Augusta. Eat some pimento cheese, and we'll see you soon, buddy.
Don't do the pimento cheese. Here's a little life hack for you, Blackjack. When you come here, and I can't believe you're not here hanging with me, but you get the egg salad sandwich, you open it up, you steal some bacon from somewhere. I don't care where you have to get it from. But you tip somebody, get some crispy bacon, throw it on the egg salad sandwich. And if you get the pimento cheese sandwich, you know what you do? You give it to somebody else and tell them, hey, here's a pimento cheese sandwich. You should have this because I'm never going to taste it.
All right, Jason, have a good weekend, brother. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
All right, joining me next on The Favorites is the friendliest teddy bear I know. There he is. There's that laugh. And the brother of all world offensive linemen, Mitchell Schwartz, Jeff Schwartz. Jeff, how are we doing today, buddy?
I am fantastic. I'm glad to be back on my favorite podcast of all time with you. And ready to talk some football, man. It feels like, obviously, with the Final Four going on, the start of Major League Baseball, that we have forgotten that the draft is like 2 weeks away, 3 weeks away. So it's getting here fast.
It's coming. And we've got a lot to talk about because the NFL has really become a 12-month-a-year sport, Jeff. Let's start with a little bit of the sizzle, and then we'll get to the steak later. Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster just seem to really not like one another anymore. I mean, they can't stop going at it on Twitter. What are your thoughts on this whole online melee?
Well, it's not really Juju. It's Antonio Brown. And look, I have said from the beginning that, you know, when the whole thing came out with Big Ben and Antonio Brown, I said, look guys, I know it's easy to jump on Big Ben, and a lot of people did, right? Big Ben's a cancer. He's a terrible leader. He might be not a great person, not a great leader, but everyone absolve Antonio Brown of all misgivings. Antonio Brown did not show up to practice Friday and Saturday of a must-win game week. They showed up Sunday expecting to play. He's not going to play, all right? So he basically sabotaged himself and the team in that game. Now, they won anyways because of this, right? And this entire time, everyone was like, it's Big Ben's fault. And I was like, guys, just let's see it play out. But I kind of think Antonio Brown is kind of been the problem here. And we're seeing now that he's a huge problem. And I think we're seeing why the Steelers traded him away for what a lot of people thought was nothing, right? Third and a fifth. Obviously they take a $21 million cap hit. They did that because Antonio Brown is a D-bag. And if you think that he's acting like this in public now, imagine what he was behind the scenes when there's no cameras, when the bickering doesn't get out. Juju Smith, this whole thing started, by the way, because Antonio Brown tweeted out something about you can't have emotion on social media.
Yeah.
Someone replied to him showing Juju Smith winning the team MVP. And this was reported as being a problem for Antonio Brown that Juju Smith was voted the team MVP. He then calls out Juju for fumbling in a late season game that cost them, you know, that was against the Patriots, right? When he fumbled, was that the Patriots or Saints. I believe it was the Saints game. He fumbled in the Saints game. But Antonio Brown, you didn't show up for week 17. You did something that was voluntarily of your control, right? You voluntarily did not show up to practice that week, did not call back your coaches or your teammates, tried to play Sunday. Of course, they're not going to play you. Juju was trying to make a play, right? Fumbles happen in the course of a game. And then Juju answered by saying, dude, I've never taken a shot at you, man. And to this date, I've yet to see a Steeler front office member, anyone take a shot at Antonio Brown. I don't know why he's being so petty. They gave him what he wanted. They didn't have to trade him. They didn't have to do it. They could have kept him on the rosters under contract. Unlike Le'Veon Bell, if Antonio Brown did not show up, the Steelers could fine him. Like they had the leverage over him, but they traded him anyways. And then today, it's Monday right now, he tweets out screenshots actually, a message that Juju sent him while Juju was at USC saying like, hey man, love your game. Just trying to get better. You got any tips for me? Like, why is that a bad thing? That's a great thing. A young player is asking a professional to get better. Like, I would love if a young offensive lineman sent me a message like, yo, how do I get better? And so AB comes off in the situation.
You'd be like Cole Mitchell.
Talk to Mitch. Antonio Brown comes off worse and worse. I said this on the pod, I think. I said this on the pod, the live pod. I've said it on I'll Take That Bet. The Steelers are going to win the NFC North, the AFC North next year. They're still an extremely talented team with a Hall of Fame quarterback, a veteran offensive line. They do have weapons on offense that AB is now gone. Their defense continues to get better. Still have to find a middle linebacker, but they improved as the season went on. They had pass rushers. Give me a Steelers team that's pissed off, man. They're going to have so much motivation this year. People counting them out. And I think this is only going to benefit them. And look, good. The Raiders have this headache now. The Raiders are going to be a mess this year.
Well, you do make a really good point about the Steelers, Jeff. And that's if you look at them over the last couple of years, they tend to have played to their competition. Like they're not a good favorite. They're very good when they're catching some points. And they're going to catch points more often than they have in a long time this year. So you've kind of talked me into this with you.
They have to fix that problem of playing down to opponents, and I don't know how they fix that other than just preparing better during the week, and that might that's a problem I think Tomlin has to figure out and Big Ben has to figure out because I don't remember the stat, but something like when a team's favored on the road by like touchdown or more, the Steelers are like the worst in the NFL over the last X amount of years. It's not football season. I don't have the stat right in front of me right now. But whatever it is, I mean, they're terrible against right. against um, opponents on the road as a big favorite, which I know it's tough to win, and you know, you typically want to bet the home dog, but still, I mean, the Steelers are underperformed, so they have to figure out a way to be better at that.
All right, well, let's move on from Pittsburgh and talk about the number one pick in this year's NFL draft. That's the Arizona Cardinals right now. I think everyone in the known universe expects them to take Kyler Murray, number one. Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray seem to have a very close relationship, seems to fit his system real well. Where does that leave Josh Rosen, last year's first-round pick by the Cardinals?
So I said this about 2 months ago, that he was going to Arizona. Everyone thought I was crazy. Kyler Murray's going to Arizona. It's happening. So where does that leave Josh Rosen? So he reported today, Monday, to Arizona, like he should. I mean, offseason program. There's no guarantee he's going to be traded. And look, they could still draft Kyler Murray and not trade him. Like, he's cheap as a backup. Now, the issue I think that I would have is that I don't think that Rosen fits what Cliff Kingsbury wants to do. So I would trade him, and you get some assets for him. They're not getting a first round pick, in my opinion. The three teams that have been reported are the Patriots, the Giants, and the Redskins, mostly, and Chargers a little bit. Those make a lot of sense. I do think the best pick you might be able to get is 32, which obviously is the first round pick from New England. But in those situations, I think those are great fits for Josh Rosen. I like Josh Rosen. I think he could play any of those places. All those places, by the way, he would most likely sit for a year or two, except Washington, where if they don't trade Keenum in the trade, which they might do, he'll have to play because Alex Smith, unfortunately, is hurt. I think Rose is going to be great wherever he goes. If I were the Giants, I'd make this trade in a heartbeat. I would take a pass rusher at 6, a pass rusher or best player available 17, and trade one of your second-round picks for Josh Rosen. Then you have your backup. And unlike drafting someone at 6 or 17, the pressure's not as strong to want to play him right away. Unlike if you draft someone at 6, the fan base is going to want to play him right away. So I love the idea of trading for Rosen. I think it gets done close to the draft. They probably won't announce it until really close to the draft because you want to have the intrigue of who goes number one for your telecast. But I think this is happening.
Okay. Now, you mentioned about the Giants potentially taking quarterbacks at 6 or 17. Who do you think are the next quarterbacks off the board, Jeff? Because for a long time, I think we all assumed Dwayne Haskins was the guy, but now you're hearing a lot about Drew Lock and Nathan Jones. And I mean, where do you think the quarterbacks fall, the dominoes fall after Kyler Murray?
So every year we have this where, you know, one quarterback drops, one quarterback rises. And right now the dropper seems to be Dwayne Haskins. And there's a couple reasons for that. One, he's not very mobile in the pocket. Contrary to Stephen A. Smith, he does not run very well. And I think that's a little concerning for people. He throws off of a bad platform at times. His feet aren't really kind of set where they have to be at certain times. And he throws a lot of open guys. But I like Haskins. I think he's a big kid. I think he can throw the ball well. Drew Lock, a lot of people are high on Drew Lock. Now, Peter King today, and it's not he doesn't call a mock draft, kind of like what I'm hearing and where I think guys should go. He has Drew Lock 6 to the Giants. Drew Lock, big arm. I worry when I hear the thing big arm, because big arm to me just is a way to say he's not very accurate, but he has a good arm and maybe he can be accurate. Like, most of the time we hear with quarterbacks that are really good, like the number one thing we hear is accuracy, right? Kyler Murray, good arm, but throws the ball very accurate. Completes a lot of passes at a high rate. Good ball. You know, when I hear big arm, that's like Josh Allen to me. Big arm. Whoop-de-doo. Big arm. Like, how you throw the ball in tight windows. How do you lead guys? And their offense in Missouri is atrocious, and he wasn't able to read defenses very well. So there's some concerns with Drew Lock. I want to address one thing, and it's something that just listen to what I'm about to say. It does make sense. And just when you talk about mock drafts, just remember this. I had this argument last year with the Browns. Giants fans, listen, they think they can take a quarterback at 17, and that'll solve their problems. No, no, no. If you like a guy at 17 to be your future franchise quarterback, take him at 6. Right? Quarterback is the most important position in all sports. If you like a guy that much to be your franchise quarterback, you take him first. First and foremost, you worry about something else at 17. You cannot run the risk, if you like Drew Lock or Jones or Haskins, of him fall, of him not falling to 17. If you've identified that as your guy, go get your guy. We saw the Chiefs do this. The Texans go get their guy. The Bears will get their guy. Go get your guy. If you don't like anybody, don't draft a quarterback at 6 or 17. I think it's so bad. You know, Browns fans last year, well, we could take Saquon 1 and then someone else at 4. No, no. Go get your quarterback. Get Baker Mayfield, right? It's franchise quarterback, far more important. We see with the Browns now, the excitement is because of the talent, but also Baker Mayfield. The Giants have no excitement because of Eli. Not because of, Saquon's there, right? We know Saquon's good. It doesn't matter. So go get your quarterback at 6 if the Giants like a quarterback.
Do you think they will like a quarterback to take at 6?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they're going to do anything to rock the boat with Eli.
What's the deal there, Jeff? I mean, listen, you were in that locker room. You were part of this team. You know Eli. You guys were great friends. What's the deal? He's 37 years old and he hasn't played really well in several years. Like, why are we still doing this song and dance?
Well, I mean, look, he won them 2 Super Bowls. You know, they're very appreciative of that, of course. I mean, why wouldn't you? Eli's a great guy.
Someone forgot to tell Ben McAdoo that.
Eli is great in the locker room. He's great in the community. He's a great ambassador for the Giants. And there's a lot of nostalgia there. And I think they've gone to a point now where it's too much. Like, they have to cut ties. Think about this. The Colts with Peyton Manning, he was playing at a high level. 1 year, hurt his neck. All right, see you later. Get Andrew Luck. Last year, the Giants should have done that with Eli, got Sam Darnold, and moved on. But I don't think there's a guarantee they're going to trade for Rosen or draft a quarterback this year and then wait till next year. But what if they, you know, what if they're 6-10 next year? You know, they have a couple lucky breaks and are drafting 9th. Well, Tua's going to be gone. And I don't think Tua's going to be a great pro anyways. Eason's probably gone. Herbert's probably gone. And they're all gone by 9. You should have drafted Darnold last year and started the reset. And for whatever reason, they don't want to do it. They're being stubborn about it. And this idea, like, we don't hear this with a lot of other guys, right? You know, we have to make sure they have the perfect offensive line. They have the weapons and the running back. The defense plays well. That means your quarterback isn't very good, all right? If you have all these things have to be in place for him to maybe play up to standard, maybe you need a new quarterback.
All right, so Jeff, not a fan of what the Giants are doing right now.
No.
All right, so let me ask you. The Giants obviously have 2 first-round picks. Yeah. The Raiders are sitting there with a haul of first-round picks as well. Do you think that they get it right, or do you think they screw the pooch too?
I think a lot of it depends on Carr, if they like Carr or not. I mean, they're a team that could potentially package picks to move up to 1 if the Cardinals are set with Rosen, right, and then go get yourself Kyler Murray. So I do think that they have the opportunity to improve their team. The question is, can they draft those guys? I mean, this is Mayock's first time doing this as new GM. He's, you know, he's done it behind the desk for many years now, but now he's in charge of building a team. And how much leeway is John Gruden going to give him in drafting those players? Is it a joint experience? Is it just him? And then, you know, some teams, you know, the general manager has final say on personnel. He'll ask the coach, but it's up to him in the end. And I don't know. They have an opportunity to add talent to their team, no doubt about it. They have the opportunity to package picks up if they want Murray. But again, I think they just feel like a dumpster fire, man. Teams that sign a bunch of guys in free agency, they're never very good. I mean, right? I mean, you have to start building from within to really win the National Football League. They had an opportunity to pay Khalil Mack, didn't do it. Their offensive line coach is not very good. Carr is... it's just soft. You know, he blocked me on Twitter. I've never talked to the guy before. He blocked me on Twitter. Yeah. I don't know why. He blocks everyone on Twitter.
Because you're like the nicest human being.
No, I can be a dick on Twitter. I can troll pretty well. I'm very good at that. But he blocks like everyone on Twitter. It's why. And
Jeff,
I don't know.
Who are some other notable people that maybe used to have you blocked but don't anymore?
No, Darren didn't have me blocked. He didn't have me follow. He didn't follow me. Darren and I, we talked about this when we were in Vegas and at a dinner that Paulie is so upset about. And we worked it out. Yeah, he basically, and he laughed about it too. Like, he basically acknowledged that he was a dick about it. He had tweeted something about Nike and the way they handle their business, and I tweeted him back like he was wrong. Like, I DM'd him. No, I tweeted him back like he was wrong. He then DM'd me to tell me that I was wrong and he read the contract. And that unfollowed me, so I couldn't DM him back. And like, I have a Nike deal. I went to Oregon. Like, I know what the rules are for how you can tape your shoes up during a game. And so I resented him for a while about that. And I like him more than maybe you guys. Like, I like Darren. I mean, he's so I've gone.
All right.
I do. I don't know why. I understand. I like Darren. Sorry. I'm just a go against the grain guy. But we talked out in Vegas. I mean, look, I didn't appreciate, you know, the paying the $40 and when he invited us to dinner. That was the first. But I was like, oh, all right, here you go. I mean, I was like, all right. I mean, I guess I didn't have to pay. I didn't mind the choosing the food, though. I mean, Paul was upset about that, but it didn't bother me. But and I didn't get sick either, so.
Paulie was apoplectic about every facet of that meal, from the invitation through the check being paid.
I was an accessory, though. I figured he would at least pay for you guys. I mean, he invited or the company. I don't know what was happening. Was the company paying? Who knows? Spencer? Who knows?
Apparently, it's just us, just paying our own freight.
Yeah.
Who knows? All right, Jeff. Thank you for joining me. You're a remarkable human being.
I need to have
credit
some more,
to the human race.
I need to have some more locker room Pauly stories. Like I don't have. Like I just didn't live the life that Pauly did. Man, his stories are just. I think he hit in the face with a baseball yesterday in a minor league game.
Next time we're together, we'll sit down and we'll make up some locker room stories that could be yours.
Did you
just say you got hit in the face with a baseball?
Yeah. I figured it wasn't even if you're gonna pick that up or not.
Were your hands not working or
no? I went to a game, a minor league game with my son yesterday, the first day game for the Knights here in Charlotte, and we're like five rows up from third base. My son's like half paying attention, but whatever. There was a foul ball hit to and the third base coach picked it up, and he turned around. And I pointed at my son, and he like nodded at me and threw me the ball. Well, the lady in front of me, I'm just like sitting on my chair. It was a great ball. It's like gonna hit me in the hands. I didn't have to stand up. I'm sitting there. And then the lady in front of me gets up, the ball tips off her hands, and hits me in the face, and then rolled down, and she picked up and gave it to her kid.
Oh!
And then my son, like later in the game, was like, Daddy, like he made a comment like, Daddy, you know, I want a baseball, and like I was like, oh, you want a baseball, Alex? Do you really want a baseball? He's like, yeah, I think I want a baseball, Daddy. I said, oh, okay, well, maybe I'll find a way to get you a baseball. And the lady, like, turned around and then, like, went down and got, like, she, like, sweet-talked one of the players and giving her a ball. So my son ended up with a ball, but not the one that hit me in the face.
Wow. Well, what did you say when the ball hit you in the face? Because I think a lot of people would probably know sanity.
The lady was like,
gosh darn it.
I just was pissed because the whole crowd was like, ooh. You know, I was that guy.
Oh.
I pride myself in athleticism, and then that was just a bad show of athleticism, just getting hit in the face with a ball. There was no video board, so I didn't have to like
really nothing.
See it again. But my son, and the funny part is the ball like hit my son in the leg and like rolled off him, and he's like he just kept eating his ice cream. I just didn't even care.
All right. Well, there's really no better way to end a show than Jeff saying that he got hit in the face with a ball. If this were Paul telling the story, it would be a very different story. But thankfully,
I'm
not
going to fight. I'm not going to fight a mom over a baseball.
Shorty, I'm not implying it would have anything to do with baseball. If it was a LaDuca story, it'd be a whole other realm.
I'd end up at like Denny's with the with their mom
is.
And like
yep. Go to the strip club afterwards. Now you're getting there.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening to the favorite. He's Jeff Schwartz. I'm Blackjack Fletcher. Make sure you download, subscribe, rate, 5 stars, all that great stuff over on Apple Podcasts and radio.com/TheActionNetwork or wherever you may get your podcasts. Until Thursday, love you.